I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast.
Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, a real treat, the CEO of Evernote, Chris O'Neill. Chris is the CEO of Evernote. As I mentioned, he's currently tackling the challenge of turning a beloved, globally recognized brand into a productivity powerhouse beyond its already sizable 220 million member base. One of those members is yours truly. I've been there for a long time. Now, prior to Evernote, Chris held a variety of executive level roles at Google, coaching multiple teams to success, and he was the managing editor of Google Canada. Canadian, fellow Canadian, always a great opportunity for me. I love talking to Canadians. And we talked about a lot of stuff today. Being the technology industry leader with like just tons of experience that he has, I wanted to dive into, you know, some of his history, as well as, you know, kind of some of the things he does. He talked about something that he does productivity-wise that I do. He talks about, you know, his thoughts on paper, experimentation, things like that. There's lots to get into, as well as something that I've probably heard in passing before, but the backpack problem. So this interview took place shortly thereafter the interview I had with Mike Williams a few weeks ago. So again, Skype just decided it didn't want to take into account the Blue Yeti microphone. So I've got to let you know that there's a bit of shallowness in my voice throughout this discussion. Again, another great discussion, and it totally sucks that there's some shallow mic noise throughout, but it doesn't detract, I believe, from the quality of the conversation. So just want to put that out there right out of the gate. And now let's get on with the show.
I'd like to welcome Chris O'Neill to the Productivityist Podcast. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
It's a pleasure to be here, Mike.
So first off, we got all the Canadian niceties out of the way behind the scenes before we started recording. But it's always fun to talk to a fellow Canadian on the show, especially when we say Toronto the way it's supposed to be said. but I want to, before we dive into like Evernote specific stuff and some of the productivity kind of, processes that you have in place, or processes, I can say, that you have in place. The journey to Evernote, like from where you started off, we touched on it a little bit in terms of background in Canada, but to go from where you were at Google to Evernote, can you talk a little bit about that journey? I know it's been widely discussed in print. We'll share some of that, and maybe some of the things that when you got to Evernote, you're like, oh, this is kind of neat or kind of different, and this is what I'm going to bring to the table.
Yeah, sure. So yeah, I grew up in very small towns in Canada. You know, very stereotypically Canadian. You played lots of hockey, ate lots of donuts, etc. And yeah, I guess my journey in tech really took hold in about 1998. So I made my way to the Bay Area for what was supposed to be a couple months. And, you know, here we are 20 years later. So it's been an amazing run. You know, I had an intuitive sense that technology, it was going to play an important part in my life, as it does in the lives of millions of people. And I really wanted to be part of it. So I was here for the first .com kind of boom, if you will. I saw before, during, and after that. Made my way to Google. A lot of my peers and friends preceded me to Google, and I was brought in at a very interesting time in 2005 when the company was, you know, experiencing hyper growth. And really, I was hired as a bit of an experiment. You know, I didn't have the types of background that the rest of the people at Google did, but I found my way into the company. And over the course of 10 years, had just an amazing run. I had maybe five or six different roles, including running Canada for Google, which was in many ways the highlight of a really incredible run. So I got to learn just how to you know, scale companies really quickly, build incredible culture, keep up with the chaos, and you know, really try to just manage it a little bit as best as you could. But really, really profoundly inspired by a mission that matters, and really the notion of thinking really big and really trying to hire the best people and create the best culture to deliver against that mission. And you know, in terms of Evernote, you know, first off, I I've been a user since 2010, and it actually did coincide with moving my family back to Canada. So as it turns out, moving across a border with family, pets, and cars creates exponentially more complexity. And I turned to Evernote, actually, to help manage that complexity. And then from that point, Evernote, of course, has worked its way into every ounce of both my personal and professional life. But really what I saw in Evernote was just this really incredible brand, incredible community, and a product that really had captured the world's imagination early on. And it really solved and continues to solve a pretty acute problem that we all have. We're all bombarded with information all day. And Evernote is really a bit of a superpower for me to help me deal with it. And that's really where it began and ended, really. This phase of my career, I want to work on things that matter and things that I use personally so I can make a difference. So I'll kind of pause there. I can go into more details if you're interested, but that's really the beginning of the story.
So when you got, I want to dive in a little bit more into, first off, when you first started using Evernote, you talked about the move back to Canada and you discovered it. What were some of the things right out of the gate? How did you kind of organize it and how did you manage your Evernote right out of the gate? If you can remember, we're talking like 8 years ago now, because I know that Evernote users and anyone who's listening that's ever used Evernote, they hear about Evernote and then they say, oh, I've heard great things. I must get it. And then they get it and then they go, okay. Like they don't quite know what to do with it. There's lots of material that you could look online to figure out what to do with it, but that's almost a level of over choice as well. So when you started, like we're talking, again, almost a decade ago, how did you start using it? Like what, were you a tag guy? Were you a notebook? Like how did that all come together initially?
Sure. So Evernote really had incredible buzz, still does across Google, right? I mean, lots of senior people there. I started using it in around that 2009, 2010 timeframe. So I have my very first note was the welcome email from Evernote in May of 2010. And as I said, I really started to use it and dust it off in October. And in fact, it was Canadian Thanksgiving, which is earlier than American Thanksgiving in October.
Yeah, we're proactive when it comes to that stuff.
But it was, I actually, my very first picture, I was trying to figure out how it worked with the mobile phone. It was a picture of a centerpiece of the Thanksgiving thing. And in the background, you get a flavor, a little whiff of the complexity of my life. Like my California born wife, really was not crazy about winter. So we stocked up in all the winter clothing. You can see that in the background. So it really was a time of chaos for me. And really where I started to use it was all the medical records for all the kids, all the tracking all the different things that were arriving at different points. I was managing my old job and my new job. I was on a board or two at the time. So I had all these different contexts that I was switching between. And I started, the more I used it, the more I found it could just take some stress off my mind. And it was like, okay, great. I have a punch list of all the things that need to happen. And I have a little status by each one of them. So, okay, great. We've switched the life insurance policies. We've switched we have new doctors for the kids. So I had this long list of all the things that had happened. So that's where it started. From there, so I'm not a tag person. I really am more like, I'm like a just use search, depend on. I use some levels of notebooks and sometimes stacks, but not too familiar with that, or not too dependent upon that, rather. But what really happened from there was I started to use it for one-on-ones at work, and then I started to use it for recurring meetings, and then I use it for any commercial related things. So managing the different accounts, whiteboard pictures, right? I'd have a quarterly meeting with Larry Page and the team back at headquarters. So I'd use that as an organizing tool to gather all the inputs and then work through the process there. So what became from a personal thing for me, then spread out to my family, crossed over into the workplace. I'd used it first and foremost for one-on-one, starting with my assistant. And then I found it to be valuable to be a good manager, to stay on top of the things that I had in flight with all the different people on my team. And then it just expanded, the use cases, it just expanded in many ways. But overcoming that first initial thing is both an opportunity and a challenge for us as a company. But more generally, when you're changing a habit, it's not easy, right? So you have to stick with it a little bit and read up and rely on people like yourself for very specific use cases. And that's been an amazing part of my journey here, is to really spend time with the community. And there isn't a day or week that goes by that I don't get a new, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you're using it this way. That's really cool. You know, for example, I now use it, you know, I call it quantified gardening. I love to garden. So I take pictures of my garden, and every year I optimize based upon what I learned. It's all in Evernote.
I actually last month was my month of gardening as we're recording this. In June, so May was, as you know, living on the west coast of Canada in Victoria, you know this. Not many people other than you that are listening may know this, but it rarely snows here, and kale can grow year round because of that. But one of the things that happened a few years ago, which again Evernote came in handy, was I accidentally, when my wife was saying, "Can you go weed?" I accidentally pulled things that were not weeds because I did not know what they looked like. What we did was we created a gardening notebook. We actually took pictures of each plant and identified them, so that way when I was going out there, I could say, "This is, you know," we tagged it weed. You know, or if it wasn't tagged weed, then I knew it wasn't a weed. And because weeds grow here, like, I mean, again, if it doesn't get cold enough, weeds grow just as quickly as plants. So that was my first foray into using it for gardening. I've used it for, I mean, there's a ton of things that I've used it for. And what's interesting is the logo for Evernote is an elephant, which, you know, obviously, you know, the idea of elephants never forget. But also when you're taking on a tool like this, it's that old ideology of how to eat an elephant one bite at a time. If you throw everything into this at once, I think that it can become overwhelming. You know, for example, you talked about having it as a punch list, right? You mentioned the term punch list. Do you use Evernote for task management? Because I know that there's a lot of people that are either use it and are quite happy or really want to use it. And for me, the functionality just isn't at that level that it can be used consistently for massive, massive task management. But for a punch list, it seems like it would work fine with the checklist option. Do you use it as a pure task manager? Or is it more for, like you said, those checklists to make sure that everything, you've got your SOPs in place, et cetera, or even just making sure you've got all your camping supplies and a tote that you need?
Use it for all those things. I do use it for workflows and task management. And you're not alone. Over 50% of our users use it in some form of task management. Now, that could be something as straightforward as a checklist, over to something a little bit more involved. Like a lot of our small businesses use the product as a lightweight task management system. So, you know, one of the things we're testing with our new product was just to really see how people would use it. And there's an example of a hairdresser, like a person who runs a series of salons in Austin. And that business is characterized by, you know, demand to hire a lot. So she was using it as a lightweight applicant tracking system, right, where you're kind of moving things through to say, okay, this is an application. This is someone we want to interview, et cetera, all the way through. And that's pretty common. So I would agree with you that we can and we will be doing better in terms of task management and workflow. We're actively testing different things right now. I don't have a formal announcement to make, but one of the things I like to say is we want to own the beginning when you have a capture of an idea. Like capturing ideas, regardless of the shape or size of that idea, regardless of the format they're in, and regardless of where you are when you have that idea, we want to be that place where you capture your thoughts at the speed at which you come up with them, and then you can evolve and nurture and ideate them over time. And really turn them into action when and where it makes sense. And you know, the thing about remembering everything, you're right, the logo is an elephant, which is an homage, you know, because elephants never forget. The way I've been thinking about it is actually, you know, giving our users the freedom to forget. Right? When we research people, when I talk to people, everyone's feeling fairly overwhelmed these days, right? You know, it's about constant context switching. We're overscheduled. Our professional and personal lives have blurred. And really, one of the things that the jobs that we're hired to do is to provide that sense of feeling more organized, feeling that sense of relief that some people get when you cross something off a to-do list. And the way I think about it is just giving people the freedom to forget so that they can stay focused in the moment, you know, on what matters to them. You know, and I think technology has done so many incredible things in the world and will continue to do things in the world, but also has had a lot of unintended consequences, you know, from ranging from addiction to devices to the sense of constantly being connected and overwhelmed. And I remain optimistic about its role. And I think that we can and will do a better job by applying emerging technologies like machine learning, for example, to surface things that matter in the moment, so that you don't have to plow through to go find something, right? We should do better. We should understand the context that you're in and then surface the information at just the right moment. You know, much the same way that, you know, I have a chief of staff, and that person probably knows my context better than I know it, right? From day to day, I'm just running around from different things. And they understand the context, and they say, hey, Chris, you have to follow up with this person. You have to do this task. Oh gosh, you got to get to your kids' play. That's the metaphor for how I view the future of Evernote. Really, this understanding of the context you're in, and being this like assistant, this thing that can truly understand that context and keep you focused in the moment, so that it's not about productivity per se, as it is about being present and making sure that you're focused on the very most important thing that matters to you at that time. So that's a little bit of a way of how I think about Evernote and technology more broadly.
So it's interesting. I want to shift gears to your own productivity habits, because you talked about, you know, you're kind of moving from place to place and you've got a lot on the go. And overwhelm is definitely a huge thing for anybody, I think, no matter what their position might be. You've got this came up in my feed when everyone was saying, hey, Mike, you might want to take a look at this. And it was actually serendipitous, because then, you know, you guys reached out and say, hey, would you like to talk to Chris? I'm like, would I? I would love to talk to him about his daily theming, because it's something that's part of what I teach when I talk about time crafting, is this idea of theming your days. And I'm going to link to the Fast Company article. But I want to talk about what your days looked like before you themed them, and now what they look like since you started doing that. Like, what has been the shift? What have you seen when you started doing that?
My system just broke, to be clear. Right? I mean, CEO of a company. I'm on a publicly traded board. I have two kids, a wife, you know, pets. I try to stay in shape. You know, and other commitments, right? There's like in technology, there's this thing is called the backpack problem, which basically means you can only fit so much in the backpack. So my system kind of broke, right? I had less demands on my time in a previous professional career, so I just needed to break before I then stepped back and said, okay, how is this going to work? And the theming is one of the tactics that work, and we'll get into that in a second. But really what was most important was really what I call North Star, right? Really stepping back and saying, what matters to me? Not in a fluffy way, but in a like deep way, right? Like what do I want to be known for? What are my commitments philanthropically? What are my commitments to my family, to my community? What are my professional goals? I shouldn't say goals. Like what's overarching? What do I want to accomplish and be known for? And so often people step over, you know, just don't think about that step, you know. And you think about resolutions, you think about goals. The reason they fail, well, there's a zillion reasons they fail, but the biggest one, in my humble opinion, is they're not linked to something that is really, you know, intrinsically motivating to the human being, to the individual. So I actually stopped to actually do that first. So I'm pretty clear about some of those North Star things. Then you can start to say, okay, great. What are the goals that are going to move me closer to those objectives? Some of which will take, you know, multiple years, even decades. So that's kind of where it started, to be really clear. And that's important. So, I then, from there, you then have a system, right? And a system, I use a modified getting things done system where, I can walk through that if you're interested, but it really has to do with, trusting a system, right? So yes, of course I use Evernote for it to capture things whenever and wherever I need them and then evolve them over time. I have a system which involves theming my days. Not that I slavishly stick to them, but it really helps. So when my assistant's trying to schedule things, she knows that Monday is the business about business day. It's when I do meetings with my team, when I try to do as many one-on-ones as I can. Friday's like a free-for-all day. You know, Thursday is more like culture and hiring. So it just gives some efficiency so that we minimize the context switching, because context switching and this false sense of multitasking really kills productivity, right? Especially if you talk to a programmer, right? In some cases, just one little interruption can ruin a whole day. But in my case, what I'm trying to do is minimize the context switching across the different courses of the day. And then one of the things I try to do is, what's the next action for any specific goal? So if I'm trying to make a hire, what's the next action I need to do? Do I need to make a call to do a back channel reference? Do I need to provide feedback? What is that next step? The last thing is part of my system is really this notion of experimentation. I do this physically, I do it with food, and I do it with pretty much all aspects of my life, including how I try to encourage my children to do certain things, or I'm always experimenting with different approaches. And this was inspired actually by a former colleague at Google named Matt Cutts, who really talks about 30-day challenges. So I'm always doing some form of a 30-day challenge, whether it's exercise or meditation or food, like cutting out sugar. I take October completely off of alcohol. And this year I actually decided to do it again in February because I felt so good. Anyway, those are the broad brushstrokes of my system, and I'm happy to go into more details if it's interesting to you and your readers.
Well, you talked about resolutions, and I bristled at those because I'm not a fan of resolutions at all. I think that people they make them too big. They tend to think that they can stretch them for the 365 days, which is both, of course, a very long period of time, and when you think about it, a very short period of time, depending on your perspective. I love the idea. I mean, I've been theming my days for a very long time, and you're right. I think that the when people are trying to adopt something like this. And what I want to get into here quickly is this idea that when you put a system in place, whether it's pure getting things done, which is, I mean, what's the next action is directly related to David Allen's getting things done methodology. And I'll link to my episode with David recently, as well as Mike Williams, because now there's the book Getting Things Done for Teens. So clearly it's a framework that works. But the question becomes is, when people start to look at these frameworks and they say, oh man, but it seems like it puts you in this autocratic or automatic mode as opposed to human. Like it feels like it seems like it's restrictive rather than freeing. What do you say to those people when they say, a system, like I just like to, you know, I'm going to, you know, I find a system too restrictive. It doesn't allow me to be as free as I'd like it. What do you say to those people you're, like you said, you've got a lot of moving parts. How old are your kids, by the way? Cause I've got young kids as well. I don't know how old yours are, but
yeah, my daughter's 10 and my son is 12.
So I've got 13 and 8. So yeah, like you've got these kids that are it's not like they're out of the house or anything like that. No, they're very young. They're at that really middle age there. So what do you say to people who are saying, you know what? Yeah, systems, I don't really, you know, a framework for me, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be the way to go. What would you say to them?
I say a couple things, depending who they are. Larry Page had a great expression, Google, I still use this, is, but creativity loves constraint. And that's true of a lot. If you talk to the leaders at DreamWorks, you know, I had interesting interaction with them recently, and someone asked the question, how do you manage creative people? He really boiled it down to two things. He said, you know, you have to let them roam and give them a deadline. If you look at music, if you look at art, if you look at anything that is worthwhile in the world, then the notion of creativity liking constraint is actually right. So jazz musicians, right, everyone thinks they just kind of improvise. They actually are very, very rigid in terms of structure that then allows the improvisation to happen. But one of the best football coaches of all time, this guy Vince Lombardi, right? He had a system, right? He had this play called the sweep, and his team perfected that sweep. And then, gosh, they could get super creative around that play, and they were one of the best teams in history. So I actually try to surround people with examples to reinforce that, yes, it might feel constrained, but actually creativity thrives under constraint, whether that's a deadline or a series of like constraining in terms of boundaries. That's how true creativity happens. So I'd say push through it. You know, I like to run as well. Like maybe I'm alone on this, but the first mile or so of a run is the most painful for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that I feel great. So I think it's the same. Behavior change is not natural to human beings. So people feel like it's constraining at first. Once you push through the other side, then you'll start to see the benefits. And then you do start to see the rewards, and then people start to see the benefit of why you'd want to have a system, right?
A couple more quick questions before we wrap up. The idea of constraints, we talk about paper. Like paper has, like paper, no matter what size paper you have, there is a beginning and an end to it. And Evernote's worked with Moleskine in the past and have the Moleskine notebooks. Moleskine's now developed their own. And they're as of right now, as we're recording this, there's the Evernote Moleskine notebook or Moleskine smart system. I want to ask you two questions related to this. First off, do you use paper? Like, are you using, and if so, is it like, when, because I mean, there is the opportunity there to get things into Evernote. And secondly, why do you think there's been such a renaissance towards paper planners and getting in, you know, we're seeing like Kickstarter projects and craft pens, like Baron Fig makes these amazing pens and these amazing notebooks. What are your thoughts on like kind of the renaissance of notebooks and paper planners that we're seeing in this day and age?
I use lots of different form factors, including paper. It's diminished over time for me. I will use it. I usually use paper when I want to freeform think and draw. So I'm a pretty visual thinker, and I like to map things out. So I like to mind map. So sometimes I do that with my iPad. But if I'm on an airplane, for example, it's just uninterrupted time for me to actually use paper and draw. But to your question about why the resurgence is actually there's science here that your writing, the act of writing activates multiple parts of your brain. Therefore, it actually helps trigger recall. And the other probably even more profound thing that's going on when you're actually writing is when you type, you're generally just kind of transcribing. You're not really processing the information as it comes in. When you're writing, you're actually distilling the information and you're accelerating the recall process early or cementing it into your brain. So you're not just transcribing, you're actually looking for the themes, which allow a mental handle to then recall later. So there's no surprise to me. I think that, you know, there can be the best of both worlds. So whenever I do draw on paper, I, of course, take a picture and get it into Evernote, and you can then. So you can kind of have the best of both worlds here. So I don't think it's a complete surprise. The science is on the side of ingestion by using writing.
So as Evernote has evolved, I've been using it since June 28th, 2008, which is, it's over a decade now, which I'm like, wow, as this is airing, we've seen things like the store and a bunch of other things that have, and it's been since streamlined. What does the, you know, if people are looking to get into Evernote now and they're seeing, you know, as you walk through, you've had pricing changes and all that stuff. It's been a journey for the company. It's been a journey for you. What, you know, people who want to get into it now, what are some of the things without obviously revealing stuff you can't reveal that they can expect to see, because there's so many options now. There never used to be like OneNote was widely, you know, kind of pushed off to the corner by Microsoft, and now they're you know, definitely they realized what they had all along, largely thanks to you guys, and are like, oh, and then Apple's got Apple Notes, and you know, then there's smaller third party developers like Bear. So it's not as if there is a lack of competition now. What can people expect from Evernote in the future that's going to keep them really at, you know, because you guys are still the standard bearer.
We created the category. Growth of the company is incredibly healthy. Globally, you know, over 80% of our users are outside of the U.S. Over half are speaking a non-English language. So there's just an enormous amount of growth. But you're right on the category leader thing. Look, we're not the only game in town, and that's the way the world works, right? This is a pretty big problem, right? Everyone's dealing with this problem of overload. And we can expect to see other people be inspired by our leadership and then try to replicate aspects of that. So I think, like, first principles, a lot of what I've been really maniacally obsessed upon is quality of the product. So when you're called Evernote, you know, the thing that Evernote needs to work 100% of the time, right? And we're not there yet, but we're much, much closer than we've ever been. So I'm really proud of the work we've done. You know, this speaks to a lot of things which are underneath the hood, if you will. Just the quality, the latency, the syncing, eliminating all those things which remove make the experience less than amazing. So that's first principle number one. And really figuring out a lot of what you were touching on before. When you're up to 225, 230 million people in the world, you're not dealing with early adopters alone who take pride. Like when you were adopting the product, you probably took pride in kind of figuring it out and making it your own. But when you're talking to other people who might have less facility with technology, you need to make the product easier to use and less overwhelming. So we've been actively trying to strip down the product in some ways, but selectively reveal complexity when and where it's needed. So that's one thing. The other is really we're seeing people use this at work. So 80% of people who use Evernote use it at work. 65% use it in both contexts. And then another 15% use it just at work. So we're really looking at that, and not to say it just focus on that, but how do we design and build for a blended world? How do we make this product more powerful when you use it with other human beings? Right? Nothing really important in this world happens with one person alone. So we've been really looking at that. So how do we make more hierarchy? How do we make sharing really just amazing? Right? We're making strides in that direction to really, as I said, make the product more powerful when used with others. And then the other aspect of that is when I say play well with others. So part of the beauty of our category leadership and, frankly, our agnostic nature is we work across all platforms, right? And that creates complexity technically, but it's worth it for us because we want people to use us whenever and wherever they want, to capture their thoughts whenever and wherever they want, to remember them and keep them forever, to then turn those ideas into action, and increasingly work effortlessly with people in their life, whether that's their family or people at work. So there's a whole bunch of things which you have started to see, and you will start to see more of, really to make this product more facile in both professional and personal contexts. And the last one, in many ways, is more out there, but also incredibly exciting to us. And that's how do you start to use technology to make people more productive? And I gave you a couple of examples, right? I see a world where, you know, we'll have a chief of staff for every meeting, and that really could be Evernote, right? So, gosh, 11 million meetings every day in the United States. Two-thirds don't have an agenda. Most people think they're a complete colossal waste of time. And over 30% of our users use our product to capture meetings in some way, shape, or form. So how do we use that insight coupled with some machine learning. So at the end of a meeting, we don't just sit there and wonder what the heck happens and what should happen next. Technology, machine learning, natural language processing can evaluate, maybe even capture the voice, the audio of a meeting, and then translate that into action without anyone having to kind of go through all the work that currently they have to do. That's one example. I mean, I mentioned task management workflows as well. How do you extract the tasks from the collection of information that people trust with Evernote to really take that into the next step or the next action? So we have this view that technology can help make people more productive, help them feel more organized, search without searching, really auto-organizing. So I think in the future, you'll see tags will be kind of, I don't want to say a relic, but you won't need them because technology will auto-tag your content and organize it in multiple different ways, in a way that is either intuitive to you or automatic, or both, hopefully.
And you see that a little bit with a web clipper already. You know, if you're using a web clipper and you've got enough information in there, it's saying, oh, this belongs in this notebook. You're seeing it with notebooks. I mean, I can't see it being too far off with everything else.
Yeah, and search. Right? I gotta say search without searching. So we've redone the clipper engine, as you mentioned. Our search engine is basically benefiting from machine learning to basically tap into your previous searches to predict what would be most useful to you. And we're experimenting with all sorts of iterations of that. And the early feedback from people are really amazing. So they're really, really positive and favorable. So there's a whole portfolio of things that we're doing to take Evernote into the future. And you know, what we're seeing is that, you know, people are okay with paying for the best, right? We're the category. It's all that we do. We're spending over half of our budget, close to 60% to 70% of our budget, to really plow it back into R&D and make the product, you know, the best quality it can possibly be, adapt to the different use cases that we see that people are using or telling us they would like, and then really experimenting with, you know, emerging technologies like machine learning and artificial intelligence to really benefit our users. And people are excited. The business has never been healthier, and the team is never stronger. We're really proud of what we've accomplished, and you know, we're just in the early innings still.
And you should be. I mean, 10 years. I've been using it for over 10 years. I've never felt compelled to move anywhere else. I think the one thing that a lot of people do when they and I think this is a mistake. We talked about frameworks and processes earlier, is that the tool is the thing. You know, it's like if it's not working, it must be the tool. It must be the app. It must be this. The thing is, I mean, there will always be a new tool. There will always be a new app. There will always be something. It's about, you know, getting proficient qualitative results from the tool. So, I mean, the fact that I can work my way through Evernote like that versus having to spend time learning a new tool, where is that opportunity cost, right? So you guys have done a great job, and I can't wait to see what is coming up for Evernote in the future. One last question, and it's more of a Canadian personal one, is, you know, besides family, because I'm sure you have a lot of family back here, what is the most Canadian thing that you miss about Canada?
Oh, gosh, there's a lot of things I miss about Canada. I just really enjoy time in nature. I mean, this is an amazing, I live in an amazing part of the world, but there's some pretty special parts of Canada, actually out towards where you live. And then, I grew up on a lake in cottage country, and that's a pretty special part of the world. So yeah, beyond just family, I think it's the place, right? Really hanging out with a cold beer in your hand on a lake in Canada is pretty special.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how massive this country is either. I mean, I was watching with my kids the other day, you know, there was Anthony Bourdain, you know, he, before he passed, he went to Newfoundland and talked about how there's a French island, like part of France is off of Newfoundland. You can actually go to France right off. And my kids and I are on the West Coast. Wouldn't it be awesome to do a cross Canada road trip? My kids are enthralled with the idea. They want to go to places like Tobermory, Ontario, where you can, there's sunken ships. My wife is less thrilled about the notion of driving across Canada, because it is very big, second largest country on the planet. But I mean, there's a lot to love here. Again, Chris, this has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time today. Where can people find out more? I mean, I'm going to link to Evernote, obviously, because that's where you are. But where can people hear more from you personally?
Yeah, sure. So I post regularly on our blog. Follow me on Twitter at CRONEILL. That's probably my main public-facing thing. It's on Twitter.
Awesome. Chris, thanks so much for joining me today on the Productivities Podcast.
My pleasure, Mike. You have a great day.
And there you have it. Chris O'Neill. What a great conversation. You know, it's always great when I get to talk to people who are, you know, visionaries in their field, especially if they're using something that I've been using. I mean, again, we look back to some of the other people I've talked to. I've talked to Andrew Sinkoff on the show before, which is in the show notes. By the way, all the show notes you could find on the website. If you're going to be listening to this on your podcast catcher, of course, you can get the show notes right there. But if you go to the website, go to productivityist.com, mouthful to say still, podcast 208. That's the URL you're going to want to go to. And you can get all the show notes there. You can subscribe to the show there. You can share the show there. You can do all that stuff. And by the way, if you're subscribing to the show, I'd love to get a rating and review from you in iTunes or wherever you're listening to the podcast. Actually, I should say in the Apple Podcasts app now, not iTunes, the Apple Podcasts app. Again, a great time chatting with Chris this week. I really look forward to the chance that we can do that again. Big thanks to John Polstra for putting this show together. He's the producer of the show, and week in and week out, he takes care of business. And thanks to you for listening. Really do appreciate it, and I hope you'll be back next week when I bring you another exciting episode of the Productivityist Podcast. Until then, I'm Mike Vardy, the founder of Productivityist, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.